From 90.9 WBUR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is Radio Boston. Coming up, confusion, chaos, and pushback against President Trump's executive immigration order.
These executive orders do not represent the majority of the American people. They do not represent our values, and we're going to get them overturned.
This focus on securing our borders and our homeland was obviously a major part of what the president campaigned on, and now he's doing exactly what he told the American people he would do.
Trump promised to make America safe again and to make it great again. But in Boston, immigration lawyers have successfully challenged his executive order.
You know what makes America great? These people. These are professors. These are workers. These are scientists. It's not making America safer, and it's not making America great.
Reaction to President Trump's temporary immigration ban coming up this hour on Radio Boston. First, this news.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. In the wake of President Donald Trump's sudden and temporary ban on visitors from seven predominantly Muslim countries, the key word is chaos at airports, in courtrooms, including here in Boston. Within local immigrant communities, academia, and within the world of business across Greater Boston, there is fear, anxiety, and pushback over what the ban means and whether it's even legal. Over the next hour, we're going to look at how the president's executive order is affecting Greater Boston. We want to hear from you. Do you know someone, a relative, an employee, a student who could be barred from returning to the U.S.? What do you make of this ban, which the Trump administration says will make America safer? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also reach us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So over the weekend, several people arriving at Logan Airport were among many across the country who were held for extra questioning. That led to a federal court ruling in Boston that paused enforcement of the executive order for a few days. And we're joined now by WBUR's Shannon Dooling to help us understand the order, the court ruling, and how families in the Boston area are reacting. And Shannon, good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony.
So tell us what was happening at the airport this weekend after that executive order was signed.
Yeah, so you touched on chaos. That does seem to be the common theme. Protesters started to gather at airports around the country, really, JFK in New York, LAX in Los Angeles. And in the late afternoon, they gathered at the arrivals gate in the international terminal at Logan. And they were calling for an end to Trump's travel ban and also for the release of several people who were being held for extensive questioning at Logan based on their nationality and as a result of the president's executive order. So by the time I arrived, later in the evening, there were hundreds of people gathered at Logan holding signs. Migration is beautiful is one that sticks out in my mind. And chanting. And Senator Warren was there for a time. Mayor Marty Walsh was there to speak out against the executive order and to show support for the Boston community. There were a number of civil rights lawyers sort of circulating through the crowd as well, trying really to identify family members of those who were waiting for the people who had been held for the extensive questioning. At one point, the crowd just erupted into cheers, and that was when Mazdak Tukabini and his wife, both UMass Dartmouth professors, both Iranian, and both lawful permanent residents here in Massachusetts, walked out of the customs doors and into the terminal after waiting several hours. They were flying from Paris into Boston after attending an academic conference there. Here's what Tukabini had to say about his experience.
We were just told that there was this new rule in place that we had to go through this inspection. So they took the passport, they did an inspection. We had to just sit for a while, I guess 3 hours, and that was it. That was it.
So you can hear the chanting in the background. Tukabini said he was treated respectfully. He emphasized that, but that the whole process was really a bit humiliating.
Right. So then there was this extremely rare emergency court hearing late Saturday night that went into early Sunday morning. Remind us what the judges ruled.
Right. So I left Logan Airport and we went to federal court. And I know you'll be speaking with Susan Church from the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association later in the show. And Susan can really dive into the legal details. But basically, it's very complicated. As you said, there was this really dramatic event at federal court. Lawyers from the Massachusetts ACLU and from the New England AILA chapter were calling for a stay on the executive orders being implemented here in Massachusetts at Boston's International Logan Airport. So that means they basically wanted to stop local Customs and Border Protection officers from enforcing the executive order that said people from those seven majority Muslim countries couldn't be admitted. And they also wanted to stop officials from refusing to admit refugees who had illegally been approved to come here. So Mazdak Tukabini, whom we just heard from, and his wife are listed on that order as petitioners. Like I said, he's Iranian, one of the countries on Trump's list not to be admitted into the U.S. But he and his wife are both lawful permanent residents. They're both green card holders. And so what the lawyers in Boston asked for and what they received is an order saying that no lawful immigrant, whether he or she be a refugee, a visa holder, a green card holder, can be denied entry into the U.S. or be unnecessarily questioned based solely on the president's executive order. So that applies nationwide for the next 7 or 6 days, I guess, at this point, according to lawyers for the petitioners here in Boston. In addition to that, here in Boston, according to the court order, this is something that's local to Logan, Customs Border Protection officers needed to notify all of the international airlines that fly into Boston that local customs officers here in Boston would not be detaining or turning back anyone based on Trump's executive order. And so that essentially it was an attempt by the lawyers to prevent airlines, say, in London, from blocking someone from getting on a plane headed to Boston.
Okay, now we started this segment talking about confusion, about chaos. Has this decision by the federal judges cleared up that confusion?
No, the short answer is I think it's actually, creating a lot of the confusion and chaos and where a lot of the confusion and chaos is stemming from right now, just because people are trying to decipher all of this and get the word out. So some advocates are actually encouraging lawful immigrants trying to get into the U.S. to try and fly into Boston because of that order. Airlines are being notified about the order and being told that officials for the government won't be detaining or returning lawful immigrants arriving here in Boston. But it's unclear how the airlines are actually responding. They are private actors, and technically these orders apply only to government bodies. And so we've been seeing plenty of people tweeting that they are still not being able to board planes headed for Boston. It appears lawyers are trying to get the word out to airlines and encouraging them to comply with the latest law.
Okay, so Shannon, my understanding is the judge's order essentially stays the president's executive order for 7 days. What happens next?
So that's right. I'm being told the lawyers involved with the order are frantically working on amending that order from Sunday morning, and we'll be filing it today, later this evening by end of business, really. And a hearing on that amended order that they filed today should happen within this week.
Okay, and as you mentioned, we're going to be talking more about some of the legal ins and outs of this a little bit later in the order in the hour with a key immigration lawyer. WBUR reporter Shannon Dooling, who's covering the fallout from President Trump's executive order. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony.
So let's turn now to a leader in Boston's academic community, which represents many people who are affected by the president's order, and that's the president of Boston University, Robert Brown. And we should mention that BU holds WBUR's broadcasting license. So with that disclaimer out of the way, it's my pleasure to welcome President Brown. Welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony.
So I want to ask you about an op-ed you put in the Boston Globe today. You wrote that President Trump's immigration executive order will deprive U.S. universities like yours of talented international faculty and students. You wrote, "We need them as much as they need us." Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I'd be glad to. Is if you think about the higher education in the United States, it's really a beacon for the rest of the world. People come here to study because of the openness and freedom in our universities and the opportunities we have. They also come to the United States after studying, and many stay and carry out their careers here, live here, and join our society. This order is fundamentally inconsistent with the values of higher education and the kind of pluralistic society we have and the meritocracy we have within our universities. And it sends a dark cloud around the world, not just for these seven countries, about the openness of our universities and our country.
And what are you hearing, President Brown, from your academic community, from your scholars, from your graduate students? Give me a sense of some of the stories you're hearing about how this is affecting them.
Well, you know, if you look at Boston University as an institution, we have about 100 students who are directly affected by the order, and another 15 to 20 scholars, researchers, and visiting scientists. These people are obviously very afraid of what potentially could happen to them in their careers and their opportunities. And at the same time, that same fear is spread across our international student population from all countries because they look at it as an executive order. They try to understand what that means. They try to understand, what is the source of the bias and how that could spread and affect them. Many of our faculty and students are marching, demonstrating in the different demonstrations about this issue.
Yeah, in fact, my understanding is there was a demonstration on the BU campus today. President Brown, as you know, White House officials have accused the news media and others of hyperventilating, that's a word they use, over this issue, and they say that the order has been successfully carried out. They said only about 109 travelers were detained in the first 24 hours out of literally hundreds of thousands of folks who typically enter the U.S. in a day. So, and they also point out that this is temporary. So what about that? Should we all just relax? Can you respond to that? I mean, do you feel that leaders of the academic community like yourself are overreacting to this? What's your response to that?
Well, my sense is that anytime the government takes a position like this, which is, in my mind, without precedent, at least in my time as president, we're not overreacting. What we're doing is trying to send a message to Washington and to our leaders about the long-term consequences of actions that may look to them as temporary, may look to them as successful because they only impacted 110 people. But we see this through the lens of the entire world. We see this in terms of how we're perceived as a country and a society and higher education by an action like this, which looks fairly precipitous.
President Brown, you wrote a letter to the BU community in which you said that students and faculty from any of the seven countries listed in Trump's immigration ban, regardless of their non-immigrant status, should not travel outside the U.S. at this time, as it places one at risk of not being readmitted to the U.S. Do you want to expand a little bit on that? Explain why you made that recommendation?
Well, you know, if you look at when that recommendation was made, it was made right after, in the early morning on Sunday morning, right after the first discussion of the court order that was just talked about on your show. We believe that for the legal immigrants we have in visa holders, that that there's a lot of confusion and uncertainty in terms of how they will be treated even in the immediate term and especially in the long term, and that right now if they're here studying, it's best for them not to travel out of the country unless absolutely necessary.
I see.
We have the advantage that our term started several weeks ago, so essentially almost all of our students and scholars are here. For universities that still are gathering their student body for the spring semester, this is a much more immediate problem than we have.
President Brown, I read about a student of yours in BU Today. That's the news and information website at BU. And I read about Salma Mohammed Hassan Abdallah, a native of Sudan. She's a research and teaching assistant at BU School of Public Health. And yes. One of the things she said was, she said, quote, "A big part of my decision to come to the U.S. is that I believed I would find the freedom and inclusion that we lack in my country. I will probably have to go back to my country if the ban continues, where the future looks even more grim." Those are sad words to read at this time in an institution like this that embraces so many people from around the world. Have you heard this sentiment from other students at BU?
Not as directly and as poignantly as she put it in that article. Mm-hmm. But I think we should all look at the long-term consequences of positions like this, because these very bright and ambitious students that come here have choice. We're kidding ourselves if we believe they only can come to the United States. There are countries around the world, and I talked about this in the op-ed in the Globe, who are really would welcome many, many of these students into their universities and into their societies. And students like this, when we throw a wet blanket over their sense of freedom in this country, will think twice about coming here.
Yeah.
And I think that's implied in her story and in a couple of other stories in the BU Today article.
And what can BU do? What is BU doing to help those students who might encounter problems after Friday's executive order?
Well, we already on Friday were working very hard to reach out to all of the affected students, the directly affected students, and we've been fairly successful at reaching all of them, in both our scholars and graduate students and undergraduate students. And so we're giving them advice and counsel about how they should go about their lives and studies at this point. We also are holding forums. We'll have a forum actually tomorrow night for not only those students, but all of our international students. Because, as I said, there's a lot of concern on our campus in the whole international student body over this issue. And we will continue to do that as necessary over the coming weeks and months.
All right. Well, that's Robert Brown. He's president of Boston University. And President Brown, thanks so much for joining us today. We're really very grateful.
Well, thank you for having me, Anthony.
It was our pleasure. Listeners, we want to hear from you. We're going to be taking some of your calls throughout the coming hour. What do you make of President Trump's executive order on immigration? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And let's take a couple of calls right now. Blaine is calling from Cambridge. Hi, Blaine. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just think everyone just needs to take a deep breath. You know, the sky is not falling. This is not a ban, and I think words matter. This is a pause. So everyone that's kind of framing it as a Muslim ban or ban against certain immigrants, that's just not true. So, you know, I think everyone just needs to take a deep breath. And keep in mind that this is the federal government. Could there be some people that are inconvenienced? Yes. But again, sovereign nations have a right to protect their borders. I know that goes in the face of what a lot of folks in Massachusetts believe. It's a liberal state, but that is a fact.
Okay, Blaine, I take your point. I'm glad to have your point of view on the show. You say it's a pause. People need to sort of take a breath. But why the pause? Why do you think the pause is a good idea?
Well, it's a new administration, you know, to just trust that the prior administration had a robust vetting system, frankly, isn't enough. You know, if we can look at a parallel group, look at the VA. Certainly, there are countless examples that, you know, they did a bad job, but yet we're just supposed to believe that the border folks do a bang-up job. Need I remind our listeners of the folks that flew planes into the Twin Towers? We're legal. We're here legally. So, yeah, come on.
Okay, Blaine, it's a good point, and I'm really glad to have your point of view. I do want to point out that the folks who were involved in the 9/11 attack, none of them came from the countries mentioned in this executive order. But I take your point. I'm glad to have it. I want to move on and get one more caller into this segment. Barbara is calling from Cohasset. Barbara, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Thank you. It's interesting that your last caller just said that about people flying planes into buildings in our country, and I'm hoping that you can shed some light on why exactly this ban covers countries for people who have never committed terrorist attacks in our country, whereas people from Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, and the United States of America have caused this terror attacks on our soil.
Barbara, it's a great point. Really, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on you there.
No, that's fine. I just, has Trump provided any clarification or, you know, how are these countries selected and the other ones excluded?
Well, one of the ways that I know the countries were selected according to the Trump administration is these were countries that were singled out by the Obama administration as being particularly prone to terrorist acts. That's one way. That is according to the Trump administration. But this is certainly a question we're going to get into over the course of the rest of the hour. And Barbara, I really appreciate the call. We're going to take a short break now, but listeners, stay with us. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you want to join this conversation. We're going to be hearing a lot of different perspectives in the course of this hour. Coming up, one of the lawyers who filed suit in federal court in Boston over the weekend is joining us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's continue now with our coverage of President Trump's executive immigration ban with a reminder that we want to hear from you. What do you make of the president's order? Does it affect you or members of your family? Do you support the order, or were you among the many protesters this weekend? Give us a call at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. And let's turn now to a major player in this story, Susan Church. She's the chair of the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association and one of the lawyers who filed suit in federal court in Boston over the weekend challenging the president's order. In some late night, early Sunday morning drama, two federal judges issued a temporary stay on the president's order on behalf of two University of Massachusetts Dartmouth professors who are both from Iran and who are lawful permanent U.S. residents. And Susan Church, welcome to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Thank you so much.
So you've had a busy weekend, as we just noted, and a busy day today. Bring us up to date, starting first with that decision by the two federal judges early Sunday morning. What is the effect of their orders?
So the effect of the order is four part, and it's unique to Boston because there is a national restraining order, but Boston's is a little bit different and from our position a little more expansive. Number one is, and this is actually we consider to be a national part of the order, is that Customs and Border Protection shall have to comply with the law with regards to what we call secondary inspections. So when we went to the airport on Saturday, every lawful permanent resident holder was being placed in secondary screenings, or what we call deferred inspection type thing, and they were being held some 4 hours, some we heard in New York, 10 hours in New York, and they're being questioned and extensively questioned. And the law is clear that secondary inspection is based on of lawful permanent residents is based on 6 points that are in the law, and that means that it shouldn't be every single person from those returning countries. So that the judge asked the government to comply with the law on that. The other kind of two major points were that the airlines need to be notified of the judge's order. And the judge's order said, and this is the third point, that all lawful immigrants, meaning lawful permanent residents or green card holders, all people with valid visas or valid immigrant visas, are to be let into the country if they're here, and they are not to be detained, interrogated, or deported.
Mm.
So
now,
that,
Susan,
and that's consistent with the national order.
I see. And to your knowledge, is the ruling being followed by border and customs officials at Logan Airport?
I mean, one would presume that a lawful order from a federal judge was followed. We are investigating whether it's being followed to a T, to the letter of the law, or in spirit, or something less than that.
I see. Do we know how many people were detained over the weekend at Logan? And do we know their status today and specifically if people are still detained?
No, we don't think that people are still being detained, but all we can do is wait at the airport. And we have attorneys from American Immigration Lawyers Association, from many nonprofit groups, waiting at the airport to try to identify family members who seem like they're in distress or they're waiting too long. But from what we can tell, people are not being detained, but people are still being placed in secondary inspections quite regularly. Over the weekend, the reason we went to the airport is there was a national listserv that was keeping a Google document of who was getting rejected from getting on the plane from overseas and who was getting held or detained or rejected in the country, in the United States, and we started seeing Boston's name pop up on that list over and over again. So we went down to the airport, and that's where we found a plaintiff. And there were eight people when we first went to federal court, but some of them had been let out by the time we got to federal court, and by the time we started the hearing, all had been let out.
I see. So my understanding is that the ruling puts a 7-day hold on enforcement of Trump's order. What happens after that 7 days, or to put the question another way, what happens over the course of the next few days leading up to that 7th day?
So we have papers that are due to be filed in court today at 6:30, and then presumably the judge will schedule a hearing on the additional filings after that we will obviously request an extension of the order.
Yes, and one assumes that eventually the Trump administration will respond to these rulings by these federal judges in Boston. Is it your assumption that this kind of kicks its way upstairs into higher and higher levels of the courts?
It may go higher and higher in the courts. We have not been encouraged by the responses from the Trump administration to the lawsuits, which have almost publicly declined to even follow them, which when you think of democracy and rule of law and your basic constitutional law, to put out press releases that suggest they're not even going to follow the executive orders is terrifying, to say the least.
Mm. Are you reassured?
To follow the judge's order.
Right. No, I understood. And now are you reassured at all in any way that the president, that the Trump administration at least clarified that the order doesn't apply to green card holders? That is legal foreign residents.
Well, it doesn't, but they're still being placed into these secondary inspections. And you cannot inspect everyone from every country because they're from that country. It just would be a violation of the law, clearly.
Yeah. So is the bottom line here, the basis for this legal challenge, is the bottom line here that this is an overstep by the executive branch of government? How would you define that?
It's not only an overstep, and not to be cynical about it, but it's a really negative way to attack a minority community, most of whom are students, you know, MIT. I can't tell you how many MIT students we've been in touch with, elderly parents with heart troubles who've finally gotten the lawful right to remain in the United States after years of waiting. It's attacking a vulnerable community for political points because it's not making America safer, and it's absolutely not making America great. You know what makes America great? These people. These are professors. These are workers. These are people who pay taxes. They're scientists. These are incredibly smart, contributing members of our society. And by harassing them, haranguing them, and separating from their families, it's the last thing you would want to do to, quote unquote, make America great again.
All right. Well, that's Susan Church. She's the chair of the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association and a Cambridge-based immigration lawyer. She filed a suit that sought successfully a stay on the president's order over the weekend. Susan Church, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And throughout this hour, we're asking our listeners to join this conversation by giving us a call at 1-800-423-8255. Tell us what you think about this executive order. Tell us your story or a story about someone you know who might be involved. And let's take a couple of calls right now, then we've got some more people to hear from as well. Leora is calling from Lexington. Hi, Leora. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I'm the daughter of a Holocaust survivor who was saved by a Christian family in Poland, and both of my parents were refugees. And I have to say that in general, my overall feeling about this is, I guess it vacillates between despair and anger, but yesterday my son and I went to Boston, and we were marching and walking in the streets and hearing people chanting, "No hate, no fear, refugees are welcome here." I really felt, I got pretty emotional, and I felt like, wow, you know, we often say that those words "never forget" are kind of hollow because we've had genocides after the Holocaust in Darfur and Rwanda. And yet here we are, this huge group of people, many of whom were not Muslim, marching for the rights of people that we may not know, but we really care. So I think there is a glimmer of hope here, and I hope that people will continue to voice their opposition to this really unethical and immoral act.
All right, Lior, I want to thank you for your call and for that perspective. A statement there on the power of protest, among other things. Well, we've heard from opponents of President Trump's executive order, including from Leora there, calling from Lexington. Let's hear now from someone who supports it. Joshua Katzen is a Boston-based real estate developer who is also president of JNS.org, the Jewish News Service, and is vice chairman of the board of the Middle East Forum. He joins me right now in the studio. And Joshua Katzen, welcome to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony. Nice to see you.
So why support this plan? You're in favor of it.
Well, we have immigration laws that are designed to protect the safety of America, American citizens, and we have to make sure that people who are coming into this country are here to do good, to participate with us in our American way of life, and are not here for nefarious purposes like overthrowing the government or undoing our Constitution or substituting Sharia law for the Constitution. So this is a vetting process that has to be undertaken very carefully.
You know, I want to ask you about that in terms of the vetting process. The Cato Institute, which is, a pretty well-known libertarian organization, think tank down there in Washington, not exactly a sort of typically liberal organization. David Beer of the Cato Institute talked about five reasons Congress should repeal Trump's immigrant and refugee plan. And one of the reasons is that he points out that refugees and immigrants from these countries are not a threat because he says no terrorists from any of the mentioned countries, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, or Yemen, have carried out an attack in the U.S. So why keep them out?
Well, they may not have carried out an attack in the U.S., but there's been an awful lot of terrorism by these people in Europe. Europe is our experiment. Europe is the laboratory. We saw a million refugees, unvetted, swarm into Germany, and now Germany is a very dangerous place for white women to walk at night. There's a high rape incidence in Germany at the hands of Muslims. Sweden has now become the rape capital of Europe. There are no-go zones in Paris because unvetted Muslim refugees have swarmed into Europe, and we don't want that to happen in America.
But isn't it the case that the Europeans have much higher immigration numbers than the U.S.? I mean, there's never been talk here in the U.S. of anywhere close to the kind of numbers that have been pouring in, for example, into Angela Merkel's Germany.
That's true. A million went to Germany. Trump is talking about 50,000, which is, in fact, an increase over what Obama let in 2016, 13,000. I mean, he's actually increasing the refugees. But we don't want this to get out of control, we being all of us as Americans. A million is too many. 500,000 is too many. One unvetted refugee, one unvetted immigrant is too many.
You say unvetted, but of course these refugees, when we're talking about refugees, are extensively vetted. And we hear about this again and again from folks who have been involved in the vetting process. In many cases, the vetting process takes years and years, and the folks who finally give these folks a green light know more about these people than their own countries do.
Well, actually, Anthony, that's not really true. John Kirby, who was Obama's spokesman for the State Department, said just last September that the vetting process is full of holes and it's not very good, and President Trump agrees that it's not. The vetting process may take years and years because papers sit on bureaucrats' desks, but I don't think we have people asking these refugees, what's your view on tolerance for Christians and Jews? What's your view on subjugating women? What's your view on the rights of homosexuals? What do you believe in terms of Sharia law versus United States law? Those questions have to be asked, and they're not being asked as part of the vetting process.
Mr. Katzen, I want to ask, we just heard a caller, Leora, who made reference to the Holocaust and the fact that she's a granddaughter of Holocaust survivor. And this brings me back to David Beer at the Cato Institute, who wrote that it's worth remembering that German Jews who turned away on a similar pretense that they could be Nazis only to be killed in death camps, that German Jews were turned away on a similar pretense that they could be Nazis. What do you say to that concern?
I think that's a ludicrous comparison, a ridiculous metaphor.
Why is that?
Because the Jews were fleeing extermination, and there was no country in the world, there was no Israel, there was no country in the world that they could go to as a matter of right. These are Sunnis being chased out by Shias. It's largely an inter-Muslim problem, and there are 57 Muslim countries in the world, each of which could easily accommodate these people.
Doesn't the U.S., though, have a long-standing commitment to taking people in who seek refuge? And now I'm going to offer one country in particular, Iraq. We invaded Iraq several years ago. Certainly the turmoil in that country has something to do, more than a little to do, with U.S. action. Doesn't the U.S. in some way bear some responsibility for taking these people in?
Well, I think the responsibility for the fact that there are so many refugees coming out of Syria right now is really landing on President Obama's lap. He set up a red line on the chemical gas. Then he let Assad violate that. That red line, and since then we've had a civil war in Syria that we are largely responsible for causing. So I guess I'll agree with you that we have a lot of responsibility for having caused those refugees. However, you're getting to the point of our tradition, and of course our tradition is to accept refugees. Most of our parents or grandparents are refugees, but that doesn't mean that they can't be vetted, and it doesn't mean that they can come into the country if they want to overthrow the country.
Do you see any problem at all with, if not the substance of this immigration order by the president, at least the way it was carried out? Because one of the things I think we're hearing from a lot of people is it caught a lot of people unawares. There's a sort of chaotic nature to it almost, that you have interdepartmental folks who just literally didn't know that this was coming when it did.
Well, it's pretty clear that the green card holders were excluded completely improperly. And I think that's caught, and that's done. I mean, people with green cards are allowed to come in. They've been vetted. But the argument that this had to be done quickly was, if you advertise that you're going to close your borders in 3 weeks, then in the next 3 weeks you're going to get an awful lot of bad people sneaking in who wanted to come in. So I think they had to do it very quickly in order to cut that off. The implementation is difficult. I think the demonstrations and the frenetic frenzy and of the opposition to this is making it a lot more difficult.
All right. Well, that's Joshua Katzen. He's a Boston real estate developer who's also president of JNS.org, the Jewish News Service. He's also vice chairman of the board of Middle East Forum. Mr. Katzen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony.
And throughout this hour, we're hearing from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. And let's take a call from Sabine, who's calling from Somerville. Sabine, you're on the air.
Hi. So I'm a humanitarian aid worker who's worked in several conflict-affected states, and I know the kinds of context that these people are running away from. And I'm also the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor, so I know personally the cost that comes when you turn your back on groups fleeing violence. And I actually completely disagree with the previous guest that there are striking parallels between the plight of current refugees from majority Muslim countries and the plight of Jews in the time of my grandmother. Including the kind of, fear-mongering rhetoric that's being used around them that's not based on any sort of evidence. So for everyone also who's saying, what's the big deal with waiting a few months, I think they're forgetting the fact that these people are literally fleeing for their lives. Many of them have already waited years and are putting their futures on hold. So yes, that's the reason that we can't just be patient and wait, and why this is an emergency, because these people's lives are not to be taken for granted.
Sabine, I want to thank you for that point of view. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. Listeners, we're going to be taking more of your calls at 1-800-423-8255. Give us a call. Send us a tweet at Radio Boston. And join us in just another, we're just going to take a break for a minute. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's continue now with our full-hour coverage of President Trump's executive order temporarily suspending some of America's immigration laws. To recap, here's what the president's order does. The order targets three groups. Refugees from any country are blocked from entering the U.S. for the next 120 days. Refugees from Syria, barred indefinitely. Citizens from seven Muslim-majority countries, that's Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, are barred from entering the U.S. for at least 90 days. What do you make of the president's order? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. I'm going to introduce a legal scholar now who's going to be in a position to answer some of your questions if you give us a call. It's former federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's also WBUR's legal analyst. And Nancy, always good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
And I should say you're joining us from New York. So lots
right.
of concern about this order. We've heard a lot about it this hour. As a former judge and legal scholar, what strikes you about where we are right now?
Well, the,
even though the president has substantial authority over foreign affairs, he doesn't have the authority to act in a lawless manner. This was lawless.
You're saying the order was lawless.
The order was lawless, right? It was lawless in a number of ways. There are statutes under which refugees were approved to come into the country, who had legally approved visas, who had legally approved refugee status. There are regulations that enabled them to do that, and that they arrived in anticipation of having those rules adhere to. In addition, no matter what your previous caller said, green card holders who are clearly allowed to come and go in the country were also barred.
Although we should say that apparently has been cleared up, right? The Trump administration now says green card holders can return to the U.S., right?
But in addition to the broader picture, in addition to the lawlessness of excluding people that had legal entitlement to be here under statutes, treaties, regulations, et cetera, excluding those people, one has to step back about the way that this was done, which was without the approval of any of the relevant authorities that had expertise on this. So it was lawless as an exercise of executive power, quite apart from what it did to the individuals. Individuals who land in the United States have constitutional protections. That is to say, they are protected from lawlessness, from arbitrary government action by the Due Process Clause. The government doesn't have a right to make distinctions based on religion. This was clearly an order that was intended to be implemented on the basis of religious discrimination, which violates the 14th Amendment. I can go on. This was a lawless act.
Let me ask you this, Nancy, because one of the things I'm hearing, and I'd love you to sort of comment on this, and this sounds like pushback to what you're saying, and that is the president has broad powers with regard to the protection of national security, and there is no constitutional right to immigrate to the United States, to come into the U.S. So how do you square that with what you're telling us right now?
Because the president may have broad authority, but broad authority is not authority exercised out of the context of the law. In other words, there are statutes under which these people were coming into this country. And if you don't like it, then you change the statute. There were regulations under which these people came into the country. If you don't like it, then you have a process for amending regulations. If there was an emergency situation like a war, there are findings that a president can make that would basically suspend protections. There are no comparable findings here. There were some general statements which were actually had no basis in fact. So yeah, the president has authority, but the president doesn't have dictatorial powers. This was the exercise of dictatorial powers. And even though these were not citizens, there's an irony about what he did, Anthony, here, which is that when people step on American soil, they certainly have the protections of due process under the American Constitution. You can't take away what you do to them has to follow some modicum of process, fair process. Interestingly enough, if he had waited and announced this as going forward while people were still in Europe or in Syria or wherever, their rights would have been less. So to some degree, he's maximized the chaos here because people who stepped on our soil are subject to constitutional due process.
Very interesting. You
do have to step back because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding. The president's power is not unbounded here.
Right. Does the fact that federal judges, including two here in Boston, have ordered temporary stays on the order suggest to you that there's at least a reasonable, I mean, it sounds like you believe there's a reasonable case to question the order's legality. What's the significance of these decisions by these federal judges to order temporary stays?
Well, it's not only the two judges in Massachusetts. There were four across the country. And I think that there had to be a finding that there was a likelihood of success on the merits, which lawyers had to run into court and make that kind of finding. I think that there is a legitimate likelihood of success on the merits because this was a lawless act. And is there a likelihood of irreparable harm? That's the other part of the test. And sending someone back to Iraq where they'll be killed is, in fact, the likelihood of irreparable harm. So it's not a surprise to me that four judges, different parts of the country, different courts,
came to similar conclusions.
Okay. Nancy, stay with me. I'd love to bring in a couple of callers who have some questions that I think you'd be in a good position to help me answer or to answer even without my help. Let's go to Louis, who's calling from Marlboro. Louis, good to have you on the program.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm an American citizen, and I hear a lot of people saying that people are protesting, and I hear it on the radio. At the same time, I don't see people supporting the president with signs saying thank you. If there's some way to do that, I'd like to be the first one to hold a sign saying thank you for looking out for us.
Right.
And assemble, because we need to support the president. He's trying his best. Why don't we try to do our best and support him? Why come we don't have rallies and do this?
Well, Louis, you're going to have to take that up with your fellow supporters of Donald Trump. But tell me, do you support what we're talking about this hour, the executive order on immigration? Sound like a good idea to you?
Oh, it's an excellent idea.
Because?
Because of the vetting. I believe that, that religion is against the Christian religion. I'm sure there's a lot of Christians that are angry at them, and I'm sure there's a lot of Muslims that are angry at us. And I think we should talk about it, find a way where we all can get together and talk about this.
All right, Louis, listen, I'm glad you called, and I appreciate hearing your point of view. Nancy Gertner, with sort of Louis' comment in mind, the Trump administration says this isn't a Muslim ban. And yet, during the campaign, we know that candidate Trump called for a total ban on Muslims. And this ban does affect seven predominantly Muslim countries and makes exceptions for Christians facing persecution. So does that look to you like a Muslim ban? And if so, would that be grounds for challenging this ban?
The government can't make laws that establish a particular religion. And the government includes the President of the United States. And so he can't make laws, even executive orders, that essentially disfavor one group and favor another religious group. It's at least subject to challenge. But as to the caller's point about supporting the president, one can think that the president is doing the right thing, but the wrong way. One can say that it's right for the president to do something about the vetting process, but you have to do it under a regime of rules and laws and process and the Constitution. This is not the way you do it. Otherwise, we're one step away from a dictatorship.
All right, Nancy Gertner, stand by. I want to go to Nafi, who is calling from Concord. Nafi, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me. Actually, I'm from Sudan. I just want to comment about the executive order the president issued. On Sudan, this is not fair for Sudanese people, because Sudanese people, they live in the United States and they are not committed any crime. And if you're talking about on January 13, 2017, last year, President Obama left the sanction on Sudan, and I think Donald Trump agreed with that. I'm wondering, if the section left in Sudan, why people included in this list? Number one.
Yeah, Nafi, let me take that question. Let me just take that question because our time is short and we're getting to the end of the segment. Nancy, I don't know if you're comfortable taking on Nafi's question. Sudan, of course, one of the countries on Trump's list from which Muslims citizens are barred from entering the U.S. for at least 90 days. Do you have any sort of insight for Nafi?
Well, I think that it relates to the point that the government can't act in a lawless way. If there are grounds for making the distinctions that the president was making, then there is a process for finding facts along those lines. If the grounds can't be there are too many Muslims in these countries. It can't be that. That wouldn't have been sufficient to support a regulation. It shouldn't be sufficient to support this executive order. In other words, the president just can't pick categories off the top of his head as he has done here.
What do you make of the fact we heard from Susan Church, the immigration attorney, who suggested that she's still waiting to understand if the Trump administration is even acknowledging the decisions by the federal judges across the country?
Well, the issue is not whether he's acknowledging it. The issue is whether or not the customs agents on the border are going to respect the orders of these courts. The orders of these courts, at least some of them, were explicitly nationwide injunctions. It would certainly precipitate a very substantial constitutional crisis if the executive did not acknowledge the authority of the federal court. That's ripping up the Constitution in a very fundamental way.
Mm. Nancy, we literally have 10 seconds left, but the final question is, where do you see this heading next?
In about a week, 7 days in Boston, 10 days in other parts of the country, there'll be another hearing to flesh out what the constitutional arguments are. A court will have to make a determination whether to enter a preliminary injunction, which goes while the case is pending. These are just 10-day orders. Court will have to decide, and with more information, whether there's a likelihood of success on the merits and whether there's ongoing irreparable harm. If the Trump administration is refining these orders, it'll come up at that point.
Lots more to come. Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge, WBUR legal analyst. Thank you so much. That's it for today. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.